Now, there's something we can do. So what are we going to do? Well, we have the different things we do to get me and keep me interested and all that, but frankly, we've got a bigger mission than that. You know, I'm going to suggest some balloons in here when I hear that. Okay, I'm getting the message out. Now, today, during the intermission, I've been interviewed by Channel 9 News. It's going to be on 9 o'clock. You get an idea of how we're doing. We're putting out a message that we are going to be a nonpartisan block vote in 1988 right. Presidential election. These gentlemen have committed on this. Now, we can do it. The reason old Tom Birch is trying to get on TV as much as possible, because that's the only way to get the word out to the guys. I feel it just like you do. I feel like if the guys get the word, they'll do it.
Yeah.
The two questions from the grassroots that come up. First, you the leaders have got to sell it. You got to go back to your guys. You got to say, that's what we're going to do. But then when the local politicians come around, now we're not interfering with congressional and senatorial elections. That's your own local turf. But when they start talking to you, hey, what are you guys going to do in the presidential election? You got to say, we got two questions. First, you got to know we're going to be a nonpartisan block vote in 88. First thing, what is this guy, be it Hart, Rob, Kemp, Bush, you know, whatever. Just ask the two questions. What is your guy to get done to get him home, and what is he going to do to get him home? And when enough grassroots comes up that way, you better believe they got, and they already got the message in the White House. Because I had met with Buchanan, I had met with Senator Dole, I met with Reverend Robinson. Already done that. Already. And they got the message. Now they're mulling over, you know, do this, start making public announcements and all that. It's got to come up from your states. Okay, they got to feel it. They got to do that. Now, the other thing is, because I'm talking about our national strategy now. And you know how it works. It's up to you. I mean, you know, nobody imposes anything on you. This is the work of the master plan. Everybody's got a better plan. We always implement it. Well, I'm trying to make move Washington. Okay, now, what we're doing this summer, we're doing some housekeeping. Okay, we brought some new groups in the coalition that strengthen us. Let's go. We've got some new states. South Carolina's coming aboard. New York is stronger. We got, Vietnam Veterans Association in Arizona. They supposedly have joined. I'm waiting for confirmation. I've got not to have joined. That's Arizona has joined. That's everything independent in Arizona. I'm assuming that New Jersey is forming a coalition. The things are happening. So we had to strengthen us. We also need money. Because you have press conferences, you got to bring a fly guy in or something like that. We got to support it. We got to do it. We also are trying to do some things in tournaments and veterans organizations. I'm also the park commander for this District of Columbia for the VFW, and I'm going to the VFW to come in to fight. You guys on the MI committees, like Richard Jones back there, we're going to go. We're going to try to turn their policy around because it's easier to get the VFW to start pushing along with all their manpower, money. Public relations resources, we don't have to guide them a little bit. VFW is a member of the coalition. They're one of the only big traditional member of the coalition. They're just not right on this issue, and that's okay. I mean, we don't always agree on everything. But we've got to make them stronger. We've got to pass a resolution. So that's another thing we're doing. So we're extending that pass. We're getting ready for the fall campaign. And what we're doing, and we're just saying it, we're remobilizing our Vietnam Army. The generals and colonels who left us have walked away, so we have selected internally new generals and colonels. And we got a military operation, and we're just going to get the job done. That's just pure and simple what we're going to do.
Amen.
Now, since I've got more of you here, if I get this out now, I can save a lot of time later because we're recording. I'll give you an idea. Kind of where I'm thinking for the fall campaign. The targets of vulnerability on this issue are the presidential candidates because they're starting to work, they're jockeying for, you know, whether they'll stand in these states. They're very edgy about any issue taming them right now. You can only get to these guys once every 4 years. And we are able to get media. That's one thing the coalition's good at. You notice we bring it out, right? We had the Chicago Tribune here, we had TV, we had AV, that we have to do it. We get a message. You didn't see a lot? They were here. No, they were here. They were here. We got a message out. And we're going to do it on the other thing. But this is my suggestion. And this is a preliminary. So if you hear it, you get an idea. I think the target is the Vice President of the United States. And it's for two reasons. Yeah, I like the guy. I mean, I knew I would have won a person he didn't even vote for, but we got a mission here. It's not, it's just how to get the job done. There are two things. He's running as a candidate, but if you put enough pressure on him, we can't put enough pressure and time on President Reagan, in my opinion, to make him move. But if you put enough pressure on the Vice President, maybe he'll move to President because of that problem. And that's kind of thinking. For instance, now this is not exactly what we're going to do, but this is my way of saying it. Suppose in the Bronx, the Vice President has his grand announcement that he's going to open his campaign headquarters in the Bronx. And he's going to bring all the media, right? Suppose the Vietnam vets with placards wearing medals and all that on the front and said, Bush was head of the CIA, where I got, you know, that kind of stuff. Yes. Nothing like that. Kind of mess up a homecoming, wouldn't it? I don't think you have to do that more than like two or three times. I'm back in South Carolina, not too bad, is it? Hey, how's it friendly? Can you be friendly down here in Georgia or something like that?
It's no item at all.
But I mean, you know, we're really smart about it. And you know, we don't have to do anything disruptive. I just think, look, you know that media would zoom in on us. And hey, release, I know that's not really common enough to you. Yes, you can bring the cage, you can put the Statue of Liberty in the cage, and that's fine. It'll be, and that's how we do it. So that's why the thing's a little slower this summer, because we're grouping. We can't be push all the time. Because we go out, we've got to complete the mission. Gathering money, using supplies, finishing uniting. We're up and out to the spots. We had to have this breakfast, and then we're going to have a fall campaign, new military operation, because we'd like to win, and that's the only way. We won in Vietnam. We're going to show them how to do it here. And we're going to help these guys. I wanted to get the mission out. Thank you for listening. Now, there are a couple of things. Next, I'd like Wes to say a few little presentations. Wes, would you come forward? Yeah, I'd like you to do it.
Well, you go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
This is very, very nice. I mean, this is all kind of what it's about. Wes has a presentation that he's made to some of the guys here that, you know, curry the war with him. Kent, here, this is your magic day. You really do take a lot of heat, so I guess that everybody talks to you even more. Kent, we have an award for me, Missing But Not Forgotten, a poem by Wes Canton, and he's autographed it to you. Bill Bennett, he's autographed this to you. Bill Bennett? Yeah, I know you don't see anything. The editor of the newsletter.
Yeah.
John Nevin? And even though I haven't finished all the awards and everything, and I had one of these for him, but we have three deputy national coordinators. Ted Sample couldn't be with us today. Gary Thomas is just recovering from a heart attack in the hospital, or he would have been with us. And Mike Milne. And Mike, I want to just take a moment about Mike. Mike is, of course, the deputy national coordinator and is also the executive director of the Veterans of the Vietnam War. And I'm glad y'all understand how it works. You get a guy like Mike Milne, who's got all kinds of things going on, his own organization. He represents an organization of 40,000 plus Vietnam veterans. One representative. Don't ever be misguided by the number of people in the room and how much clap we have. We just don't need to have anybody that doesn't have all the juice. If we got one guy with the ideas, so we all have the juice, we walk in and it's happening. That's the idea. But Mike has made a tremendous commitment because he's got all that responsibilities after the Veterans of the Vietnam War, a major Vietnam veterans in the organization. Major. He devotes his time and he's here today. Mike, I'd like for you to come forward and frankly get the certificate, but the point from Wes, but also maybe say a few words of your observations and tell us where you look at it.
Thank you.
today several times. Don't forget your women.
Hey, boogeyman.
Don't forget the nurses who served in Vietnam. Do not forget the civilian personnel who served in Vietnam. One of our key people, Joan Myman, who had to leave for another assignment, stood up earlier and just said, Joan Myman, journalist. Well, Joan Myman was one of the highest decorated civilians to serve in Vietnam. She is joining our organization. She has been a member for quite some time. And Joan is taking over the reins of the civilian veteran who served in Vietnam. And we will be bringing all of these people into veterans of the Vietnam War. Also, I'd like to have two people stand up. Rambo Richard Jones from Hawaii. On the other end of the United States, Burl Schweib was the commander of one of our posts in New Jersey. Thank you guys for coming. As Tom knows, and many of you that know me, I don't mess around. I don't have time. I'm too damn busy working for vets. One thing I want to say, I'll say it real fast, and I think you'll understand what I mean. I'm not going to take up your time to repeat all of the great things that were said here today. You've already heard it. But what I want you to remember, what this coalition and what this group of people have done, all of the various groups, the individual groups, the other national groups that are here today, to make it work, to make this coalition be better, and there will be no stopping us. I want you to take three words home with you. And when you run into a problem with another group of people or another group of veterans, just remember three words: your attitude, your ego, and your bigotry. And we'll make it go all the way. Yeah. Thank you.
Wes has also presented one of these to me. Thank you, Wes. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Wes, bro. Thank you, Wes.
We have another award here for certainly no stranger to us. And today there's a special affiliation for Dallas. You'll hear this, those of you coming into the coalition, because I tell you, Dallas and the pressure on us and things that happened there, if we had not we did not set out to do our event. That was the start event of the last year with that issue for us. And it was all the power of the U.S. government was arrayed down to packing telephone lines and everything else. People are incredible. I mean, you know, it's like you're like you having your telephone tapping. It's outrageous, you know, that type of thing. And the people who showed up, you know, you just remember it because that was just the bottom line. And Tony Donovan from California was there. And incidentally, this is the one of the reports that went to the White House. We're talking at the, you know, Jim Baker type level. Is okay, we were able to keep the vets away, but that one, the Scott Burks brought in all the leaders. He had all the leaders anyway. That was what it was about. And they said, watch out. And they're fine with that. Now, Tony Diamond is just an exemplifier. He's a comrade. As you know, he was an entertainer in Vietnam. He didn't actually serve on active duty, but he was on active duty because he was there where every place there was danger. He was where the guys were. He didn't shirk. He didn't look for the safe places. And he's come back, and he's been on the battlefield of Veterans Awards, running into the radio station, the Veterans Outlook. He's there. He comes there recently, of course, getting this Small Business Administration Award for Veterans Advocacy. First time that he's ever gotten, it's always been some kind of inside deal for somebody else. His mountains of paperwork has accomplished that. The competition is very keen for it. So he achieved one of our goals, and that's the public enhancement of our public issue. And we love him, but the public loves him. And there's nobody more appropriate than, well, of course, to get this award, the National Vietnam Veterans Coalition Leadership Award for exemplary service to Vietnam veterans, to Tony Diamond, a bravo.
I wasn't going to come to the parade. You can't give me 5 minutes. I'm truly honored to accept this award, not only for myself, but for all the people in and around Bravo. Yes, I am one of the early guys in the firefight. It started for me on my fourth tour in Vietnam. I did over 300 shows throughout Vietnam, from Phu Bai in the north, Ha Tien on the Cambodian border, and almost every fire base in LZ in between. My hometown paper, when I got home, wrote an article on me, and the headline caption said, "Mercenary of Mert stalks Mekong Delta." And I became known as the combat comedian. I thoroughly enjoyed my four tours in Vietnam. January, February, March of 1968, November, December of 1968, January, February, March of 1969, November, December of 1969. The saying at that time was, we got Bob Hope for Christmas, but we got Tony Diamond for Thanksgiving. And I thank God every day, give thanks to him for that opportunity. You see, I grew up in the glory of World War II. I marched in the parades and waved the flag and was truly honored to go to Korea and become a Korean War. I didn't wear a badge, it was no police action to me. Combat veteran with the 45th Infantry Division, and later as a refrigeration mechanic with the 560th Composite Service Company. There's a hell of a deal for you. 18 years old, I thought there was water in those pipes, had 23 units to maintain. In support of the 1st Marine Division, two air bases and 50,000 troops, with all the Department of Defense, the United States government spent, here they had an 18-year-old kid right in the middle. And that's where I learned. That's where I really, really learned how to put things together, because I couldn't get parts. I had to go out and scrounge them. But it wasn't too easy, it wasn't too hard for me, because I was also the Iceman.
Yeah.
I was the only enlisted man in the Army that had coveralls and could go into any officer's club at any time as a private E2 at that time. When I came back from my fourth tour in Vietnam, well, actually it started in Saigon at the Meyer Court Hotel when I walked into Tom Tully, a distinguished actor, God rest his soul, and said to him, "Uncle Tom, I gotta do something. I don't know what it is, but I gotta do something." And he said, "Whatever you do, I'm with you." After I came home one night, I joined the DAV post, because I am a disabled American veteran, life member. And I was marveled at what these World War II and Korean, few Korean, war veterans had accomplished. They had 5 acres, beautiful bar, clubhouse. It was just magnificent. And I said to Charlie Grant, 506, 101st Airborne, he's one of the guys that made the drop in back of the lines at Normandy, and all messed up for the rest of his life. God rest his soul, Charlie's gone on. I said, "Charlie, you guys have really done something marvelous here." I says, "I really respect you for what you've done. You're really good. Here you got all these wheels that put this magnificent thing together." And Charlie Grant looked at me and he said, "Yes, Tony, but who are we gonna leave it to?" Because they couldn't reach the Vietnam vet. But I had a special secret. Growing up in World War II, being a Korean War veteran, and having been blessed on 4 occasions to go back to Vietnam to be with my brothers and sisters, I knew the common denomination was the uniform that we wore, the spirit of that service. I knew we could put them together. And that night, on my way home, I cried. And I looked up at the brightest star in the sky, Venus. And Venus, to me, represents my bald-headed WAP father. And I said, Pop, what am I going to do? And all of a sudden, I heard, Bravo. When I was a kid, I come from a broken family. My mother and father split up when I was 7. Whenever I did anything wrong, my father would kick my ass. But whenever I did anything right, he would always say, Bravo, Bravo. And I couldn't think of anything better to say for my brothers and sisters than Bravo, Bravo. God love you. You are the very best. What began as a free picnic once a year developed into the multimedia communications vehicle for veteran-related activities, opportunities, and events. Bravo, an organization of patriots dedicated to a common purpose, to rekindling of the flame of brotherhood for not only veterans, but for all Americans, a brotherhood free, without prejudice, and with no political affiliations. Give me a land where the air is free. Give me the breath to breathe. Give me a place to lay my hand. Let me live in my free land. We serve to preserve. And that's the creed and motto of Bravo. And with me today are two guys that have been with me for a very, very long time. Both of them are veterans. One of them is a Vietnam veteran. The other got out of the Army in 1961. And I'd like at this time to introduce to you the chaplain for Bravo, my brother, Dino Pacelli.
All right.
You're meeting him, and I've just been with him. We've been split up for 9 years. I was a very heavy drinker at one time, just like all of you when I came back from Vietnam. And him not being a drinker, he used to get very mad at me, figured I was wasting my life away. And we haven't seen each other for 9 years till this weekend. God bless you, Chicago. Most of you know the other gentleman I'm about to introduce. He's my cameraman, still and video. And every damn thing else that you can think of, he's my right hand and my left hand, my brother Chuck Pickard, United States Navy, U.S. Department. I've been very lucky, you know, through these almost 20 years now that I've been battling for that key word, unity. Unity, unity. One another together. Each and every one of us are one. And just this year, for all the hard work they say that I do, producing a veterans television program for the last 4 years on 54 cables in 24 states, known as Bravo Veterans Forum, publishing and nationally distributed the most respected Vietnam War veterans newspaper in existence, The Veterans Outlook. Our radio program, which we just completed a 4-week pilot on, Bravo Veterans Report, where we feature Vietnam veteran music, and my theme song is The Last Fire Maze. Yeah. Brother Michael and Tim Holliday. Calls that we got after I got through playing a certain song called I Ain't Here Alone.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that's right. We ain't alone no more. We've got each other. This year I've been reaped with awards. The SBA, the Veterans Advocacy. And the president, who doesn't like the SBA, wants to put it under the Department of Commerce, really screwed me out of my meeting with him at the White House. I guess he's still pissed off at me. You see, my last tour in Vietnam, I had his daughter Maureen Reagan with me, and I'm still yet today not sure whether he's mad at me because I took her to Vietnam or because I brought her back. So I used to be a comedian, then I became a Vietnam veteran, and I gotta tell you the truth, it was easier to get a job as a comedian. But it showed you what a great agent I had. 10 months out of the year, he booked me in a combat zone. The only guy without a gun. And that took a lot of nerve, especially with my hands. But we got it together. The thrill of the SBA award was when I was honored to place a wreath at the tomb of our brothers, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And there, to come down to pay his respects, was a very dear, dear brother to me, and I adore the man, my brother, Sergeant Major John Holland. When that bright and shiny red Irish face came next to mine, I knew I was home. I knew I didn't have any fear, because Sergeant Major John Holland was there. Yeah, he's always there, God bless him. If any of you guys have not stood vigil at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, I urge you to get your organizations together to contact Tom Holland and join in with AFA and stand vigil for those of us, or those that were left behind. You see, I worked every fire base, not every fire base in Vietnam, but also every military installation throughout Thailand. I worked every base. And there are 2,453, as I count them, men and women that were part of my audiences. That's what gives me my strength, knowing that someday they will be part of my audiences again. I just returned from New Zealand, where I was the honored guest of the Ex-Servicemen's Association of Vietnam Veterans of New Zealand. And I'm here to tell you, brothers and sisters, that your brothers and sisters, the Kiwis, the New Zealanders, would like to see you all in 1988, and we will be arranging to put that together. I'd like to take a step back for just a moment on something that has been reflected on, and that's the Vietnamese Indo-Chinese community. Before I came in for the SBA award, I received a phone call from Bill Bennett, who promptly put Thomas Birch on the line. And they were both on the line, and they asked me to come into Washington a little bit earlier because they needed some of the leadership in Washington for a very special meeting. Through the efforts of the National Vietnam Veterans Coalition and the two gentlemen that I have just named, who somehow or other coordinated the entire Vietnamese and Indochinese community throughout the United States of America, we had 22 of the leaders of the Vietnamese Indochinese community in Washington. There was Bill Bennett, Tom Birch, Jerry Kiley, Al Holbrook from Massachusetts, Jerry College from New York, incidentally, and myself. And in one day, the five of us working together, I don't know how we did it, but we showed the Indo-Chinese community how to work among the politicians and the bureaucracy. So much so that Senator Dole came to give us an extra visit when we were in the Roosevelt room at the White House, meeting with Mr. Pat Buchanan, and I almost fell on my backside when Mr. Nguyen from San Jose, my brother Vietnam, from San Jose, said to Mr. Pat Buchanan, "Mr. Buchanan, we, the Vietnamese and Indo-Chinese community, wish to inform you and you to inform all authority and the President of the United States that the Vietnamese and Indo-Chinese community voters put their complete and full support in back of the National Vietnam Veterans Coalition and the Vietnam Veteran. So the Vietnam..."